I want you to think of something that you are really great at. Maybe it's programming language or a framework. When you speak with someone who knows less than you, it's really clear. We all do this verbal dance to see how deep one another's knowledge pool is. The same is true with leadership. Senior leaders at your company can tell the difference when they're interacting with you about how ready you are to lead. Now, it's not about going crazy 100% leadership and abandoning your craft. The greatest leaders are masters of their craft, and then they've also learned leadership skills. So what is the right mix for an individual contributor or new leader role? Well, you could start by once a week setting aside a small amount of time to learn what leaders do and then practice this with both yourself and others. You'll have to intentionally allocate time to developing yourself as a leader if you want to get to the next level in your career. Take advantage of this season in your life and decide to improve yourself as a technology leader by going to leaderbits.io, technology leadership development. Take action, not classes. Today, we are talking to Rob Duflo, the CTO of Defy Solutions, and we discuss investing in yourself and the people around you, creating a successful remote culture that works, and how empowering your team keeps the morale high and promotes growth. All of this right here, right now on the Modern CTO Podcast.
Here we go. This is the Modern CTO Podcast.
Oh, yes. All right, let me get my recording systems set up and like back up.
No worries. Like I said, some reason the neighbors are like deciding to have their lawn finish up like right now. So I'm hoping, I was like, really, of all time? So I'm hoping they finish up in the next few minutes. I've been at it for like 40 minutes now. So I can't imagine there's not that much lawn out there.
How much lawn is there?
Square footage. Square, maybe like 200. Come on. It's not that big.
Oh, this is so good. All right, so the backup system's going. Jake, how is our systems going? Any lighting adjustments for the beard? The beard's looking good.
As long as the beard looked magnificent, that is all
it does. It does. Is that an upside down Yeti you got going on there?
Yes, that's exactly what I have up there.
Yes. We got a right side up one.
Yes, excellent.
It's like parallel universes.
You're Florida, so maybe, I don't know, and I'm in Seattle, so.
So do you primarily work from home?
Yes, yeah, actually. I work from home 3 weeks out of the month, and then I spend a week down in Dallas Grapevine area where we're based down there, just to get FaceTime with people, kind of working with them on the executive pieces and all that.
So we have an internal debate at the Modern CTO Podcast here. How do you say the name of the company?
Oh, it's Defy.
Defy.
There's a whole video on it, actually.
Is there?
I'll see if I can find it. We did a whole marketing joke around it. Defy or whatever. Yeah, no, it is Defy. Defy Solutions.
It's smart that you realize the market like saw that, and so you use marketing to address it.
Oh, yeah. We've got a brilliant marketing group headed up there. I have never worked with a group that is so fun and inspirational. It works both internally and externally for what they do. I love it.
So what does Defy do?
We are really the core of what we are is we give loan origination and just an entire ecosystem around providing accessible lending systems for everyone from small mom and pop groups that want to actually get into lending of any kind all the way up to big, larger groups, some of the bigger banks even, you know, talk with them and things like that. Mostly we deal with indirect loans. So the idea is you go into a dealership or something like that and you'd sit down and you fill out all that paperwork and it goes through a system. For like prime loans, that's fine, right? You know, 800 scores, 750 scores, things like that. Those just go right through. But when you start getting into some of the subprime and the areas where things get a little more tricky, that's where a lot of our systems kind of come into play. Automatic automation of being able to say, hey, based on your scores and what we've seen, your history, we pull these rules and formulas together and say, yeah, we can either give that loan or not and do that in seconds.
Oh, that's awesome. And then the last time I got a car, I got a Jeep, right?
Yeah.
And they had this giant like DocuSign screen.
Yeah.
That thing's crazy.
I know, right? No, it's getting to that point. The one thing I'd say is like, you've got housing market and that really pushes all the technology, right? Now you can just buy a house on your phone and things like that. But the auto lending industry is always kind of followed behind that. And this is our whole game, was being able to help everyone kind of start to catch up in that technology world and really, you know, be able to make those decisions really quickly and play against some of those bigger competitors and stuff. Because, you know, time's money in those things.
So are you like a multi-rater? Is that what they're called, or?
I'm not, we never used that term or anything like that.
That's a bad term.
Yeah.
Sorry. I didn't mean to use that word here.
No, it's fine. I don't know if it's actually bad or not, but it's I would say that it really comes down to what the lender wants to use. That's half the point of what we do. We work very hard to make sure that we have a system that's flexible to where you can bring in whatever kind of scoring you want within the system. And if it's not there, we have a technology team and a group there that will work with the people who want to work with DeFi to put those systems in place.
Okay. So there's you, your customer is the lender,
right?
Because there's also like, I saw a screen when I got my car. He said, you know, here's your four or five options. And he puts the information in once, and then four or five lenders come back, and then we go back and forth and figure out which one's the right one. I didn't know if you were that, or your system we're probably interfaces with that system.
Yeah. We're actually behind that. What you might have been dealing with is actually one of the many entry points that you can come into our main system, right? Which is the LOS loan origination system. And so you could have gone through a dealer tracker, a Route One tool, which those are companies that actually work directly with those dealerships to sell cars. And under behind that, those dealerships usually have some kind of partnerships with these lending companies, either the main banks or the smaller ones. And through that, they can make decisions whether who's going to give the best loan, who's going to give the best rates. And that's why the time is so important in this, and why it's got to be as fast as possible, because those dealerships are just looking to push those cars, right? So they need to make sure that they get the best loan, the best options available. And when they put all these things together, who's going to make that pop the most for them, right?
Oh, nice. So you want to return your results the first to that multi-system. That I think that's a system I was calling the multi-rating system.
Yeah. That might be what it is. Because, they probably got ratings from multiple other LOSs and things like
that. Yeah, so if you return fast, you have an ability to be at the top of the list, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And so, we want to be as fast and as quick as possible because, if they're seeing the best option right there, and you know, it's all about that, you know, big quick buy. That's how they do it, right?
So, how did you get from Microsoft to DeFi?
Okay, that's a good one. So, I worked at Microsoft for 15 years. I started in the right at the beginning of 2000. I actually worked for a bank in their technology department there. And then I literally quit the minute before Y2K hit.
Because of Y2K. You're like, I can't deal with this. I know the stress this is going to bring. I'm out of here. I've seen the source code. I'm not dealing with it. I'm out of here.
No, it was it was kind of a funny one as far as that went. But then first thing I did was went to Microsoft and worked there. But back in Satya kind of came in, he was really looking to reorganize everything. And so, I was part of that first big layoff group, with Microsoft at that point. I actually watched a lot of my friends who I worked with for a long time, all kind of put to the street. So, and it was an interesting day. But I took that time off I took 6 months off, just kind of got in touch with my family, things like that. And one of the people who I'd actually worked with, during that time, was working at DeFi because his sister knew the CEO. And for some reason, he had in his phone that he knew that I was going to start looking for work at the beginning of the year. And no joke, I had actually just finished typing up and finishing my resume, set my laptop down on like my coffee table, and I got a phone call. And he's like, "Hey, Rob, I thought I heard you're going to be looking for work soon." And I'm like looking at my laptop. My system.
The universe is watching you.
Exactly. And I'd never been to Texas before. For the most part, I've stuck around Asia and kind of the north side of America and all that. And I went down there and I looked at the company and I loved what I saw. It really had that really kind of early Microsoft tech, you know, small company feel. I'd never worked for a company of that size. And so I was in. I wanted to be a part of it. And that's kind of how I got into that game.
Nice. What size was the company when you joined?
Ooh, right around 30, I think. I think we had about 30 total people. We all kind of just did our huddles in the middle of the main room there at that time. And we still have a lot of those core people. But yeah, we've bloomed up to, I checked with HR before I got on, we're at 96 people.
Yeah. It's feeling good though, right?
Oh yeah. No, it's been great. It's been really exciting. I love the feel of a smaller group. There's the idea of all that red tape, all the stuff where you're like, well, you got to go through this process and that process. They kind of fall away. You still need to keep, you know, certain, you know, walls around the cat, so to speak, but it's a lot more freedom to, you know, innovate and work forward. I love it.
That's exciting. Yeah, that's a good question for me to ask. So the CTO of Microsoft, Kevin, he's coming on like in 3 weeks. I'm going to ask him about how he keeps it like small and family, like the best possible way. I mean, you're struggling with the fact that you have a company that's a technology company with 10,000 right. plus employees. So, I mean, you're obviously putting out in a tremendous amount of effort to not let it feel corporate, because no corporation's like, we want to be corporate. We like, nobody strives for that. But I'm curious about the challenges that he faces and how he tries to keep it small and family like.
Absolutely. And I mean, even when I was working there, I was working on some really cool projects, but I never actually had I had FaceTime like Steven Sinofsky and some of the people that were there during the Windows 8 push and all that. But I never really met any of the true CTOs in that time. I'm really interested to see how that talk goes and kind of what they're looking for next, especially when you look at all the things they've been doing recently as far as opening up to GitHub. Now they've got a Linux distro they're working on, all those pieces.
Ooh, just nice.
Really surprising to me. I really love what I'm hearing there. So I'm curious to see how they're kind of pushing out into that open source market and really starting to play and not just kind of lock it all up.
They're going to make such big waves. I was watching their release of their HoloLens technology and the new components inside of it. They're making some small advancements in the chipsets and stuff for depth detection. And I was geeking out over that. And I was like, oh man, you know, when you build those core pieces that everyone's going to API with and build into their vision systems, that's how you know, Qualcomm this thing.
Oh, absolutely. One of my very good friends, actually, my old team, the one I was with right before I left, actually became what the HoloLens team is. And some of my friends are still working on that. And that stuff just blows my mind. I know you like to talk a lot about the voice that, oh, before I forget, I'm going to turn she.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
Red. I just realized that I was going to do that before we started. But the whole HoloLens, I've got a chance to play with it, really look at it. And VR is kind of awesome and voice technology is awesome. I really love what I could see in a very, you know, hybrid VR world that where you're taking things around you and adding data to them as you go. It's brilliant. Like, let's say you were going through a car lot and you were looking at these cars like we were talking about before. And let's say you had these glasses on. It looks at the car, recognizes the car, knows the VIN numbers, tells you all the options, can even tell you based on software like this, like, hey, this is what your loan's going to look like based on your information. Here's the options you can get now. Here's what you could get if you wait. And it's all right there for you. You don't have to talk to people. It's all information right in your face right now. What do you want to look at now? I love that game plan. It's brilliant.
It actually makes, and then like technology advances so fast, we don't even need it for car shopping because Uber's flying us around in their new little drones.
Exactly.
I saw their roadmap the other day, this video. They actually have their pilot is actually in the vehicle, but have you seen the custom vehicle Uber has made?
No, I have not actually seen the actual vehicle. I heard they actually have been doing some test work on that down in the Dallas area, though, or down in Houston area, I think.
The Dallas-Houston area is going to be, they're launching in 2020. And they're going to be, it's going to take riders. They're doing a private launch, but it's going to take riders by 2023. And it's going to cost as much as an Uber X. And it looks like a plane, but it like taxis to a platform, and you would go to like the station, or it'd be on top of an existing building. And then the plane thing taxis to the edge of the building, and then it'd be vertical, because it looks like a plane, but it's got the drone style things on it as well.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
How's the FAA going to deal with all that? They're already wanting to put it on bigger drones and things like that. I mean,
so they have pilots in it now. That's how they're dealing with it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you got to register your flight plan.
Flight path. Yeah.
You got to have to automate the heck out of that. That's going to be a real upgrade.
We usually do it like on the drive to the airport. We're like calling up, getting a flight path, you know, account number and stuff. I somehow ended up with like 4 friends who are pilots.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you can do that. I didn't even know, but I've heard. My brother's works in technology over at Alaska Airlines, and all the systems over there are still, the core of it still built in the 60s, you know?
Oh, yeah. As you, when you have like a private planer and you're going to take it for a spin, right? Mm-hmm. And you, on the ride to the airport, you call up and you have a phone number because you have your plane registered at an airport, right? And
right.
So you call the phone number and you register, you give them your tail number and you register your flight path and they'll go with you back and forth because sometimes they'll adjust your flight path. Ah. And then when you get into the plane, you enter in your path and you, then you just do your normal procedure.
And then hit all the nav points. Okay.
Yeah. But there's like, there's this, and yeah, there's a, like an interstate, invisible interstate in the sky mm-hmm. and you have to register for it and get cleared on it, and they put different planes at different altitudes based on the type of plane they are and what else is happening around. It's all really interesting.
That is really cool. Yeah, yeah. They got to get that up to Seattle because our traffic is just not good.
No, you should do what Elon Musk does. He's like, forget it all. I'm just drilling under the earth.
Under the earth indeed.
Yes, I'm going to use flamethrowers to melt the rock, bore through the center, and then put a giant hyperloop tunnel in there. That's what I'm doing.
Absolutely. I mean, if you give it all the air in there, then yeah, you can get that, you know, 700, 800 miles an hour. You can be anywhere in no time.
They were like Asia.
Yeah, Asia. Well, they were talking about an LA to New York run where they'd actually just have this tube and yeah, completely no air in it. Then you basically lose all resistance. You can go 800 miles an hour, faster than that even, between these two spots, get there in a couple hours.
Yeah, they were trying to do it so long with these planes that are bouncing in and out of space, you know, mm-hmm. riding the edge of the space and the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But then I think that this ground way is going to be way more efficient.
Well, you look at how subways even started, and there was all these worries and scares about being under the ground and all that. And yeah. that's where, you know, you've left Earth, so to speak, as far as they'd said in the late 1800s and such, when they're putting it all in Boston.
Yeah, they actually, I had a friend who's an architect, and he's telling me that when they started to build these large buildings, mm-hmm. People would freak out because if you stand under them, it looks like it's leaning over and gonna fall on you.
Yeah.
So they actually, in the architecture, they have to engineer ledges to prevent the optical illusion that the building's falling over on you.
Oh yeah, I can see that. I haven't spent much time I've been in Seattle, and the buildings there are pretty tall, but I was over in New York City for the architecture conference a couple months back now for O'Reilly, and yeah, I was walking on the street kind of looking up, and I could see that kind of almost vertigo effect that you get.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they also remove, the 13 number from the floors and most of the buildings too. So you are an author. You write some books.
Oh, so yeah, you heard about that. Yeah.
We have a research team, Rob.
Yeah. Yes, I've written some books. I was, that's why I was so impressed. By the way, thank you for the book. I really do appreciate that. I was looking at it like, oh yeah, so it looks like you're also doing your own self-publishing things, because I've played around with a lot of that, and we built this small little group of mine that, you know, we love to write. I really just want to challenge myself to put something out there and really tell a story. So I started doing some kind of sci-fi thriller stuff, and that's pretty fun. I've actually spent the last year writing in young adult romance, believe it or all things, just try something completely different again.
Yeah. That's actually a really popular category. You're the third person who's mentioned that to me.
Oh, really interesting. I'm glad to see it's picked up. Like some of my favorite authors, even in that area, I just, their writing style and just their way with words is just epic. I can only hope to aspire to be that good.
Right. I love good writing. So what were you doing in Asia? You said you spent some time in Asia.
Oh, so I had some, one of my, a couple of my really good friends were over in Japan, and I spent some time over there. I've always had an affinity for Japan and that area. So I was in the Chigasaki area, living some time in Japan, having a good time over there. It was a lot of fun. It's such an amazing culture. You go someplace and you think you have an idea of it, but till you truly experience and live it, for a while, you just haven't. You just don't know what it's like. So I was doing that for a while. And then I actually got to see a bit of Hong Kong as well. I had a friend who was married someone from Hong Kong. So we were over there for the wedding. I got to spend some time over there and just seeing that culture as well and how different it is. You get all kind of in that same area. It's amazing. At some point, the wife and I want to get over to Europe as well. But yeah, Japan, seeing a lot of it, just the entire history. I've really fallen in love with the whole spiritualism around Shinto. If you've ever looked at that and just kind of being one with the earth and the world around you and kind of looking at it as this big, you know, bigger organism than just yourself. And
yeah,
and it's just an amazing way.
This morning on my Audible, I just finished up one of Deepak Chopra's books.
Oh, him? No, I have not. To tell
oh yeah. He's just I encountered him because he was speaking with Tony Robbins about something. They were having this back and forth conversation, and he talks about basically thought and like, you're not the mind, you're the observer watching the mind think.
And like,
yeah, your different parts of your consciousness and how it works. But very simply explained, this is my first time trying to repeat it, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's going well, but he, Deepak Chopra, he's got a number of books. I was first introduced to him by, I was reading this book called Untethered Soul by, I think, Michael Singer. Mm-hmm. And he had done like a quote or an intro to it. And I was like, oh, who's Deepak Chopra? And then I saw him years later with, Tony Robbins. And then I was listening to him more, and then I figured, oh, I'll grab one of his books. And I did, and it was just really good. I like the concept of that we're not our thoughts, we're the consciousness observing our thoughts occurring. Like I like that because it feels very real to me, right? Like I can almost like watch myself think, if that makes sense. Not to get like too far off of the CTO podcast topics.
No worries.
Like, you ever get that moment where you're kind of like observing yourself, like think, you're like, oh, that, like, you know, that was a weird thought or whatever. And the way that they explain it is very unique and simple. So it was worth a read.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm trying. I'm taking a second here to see if I can find it. Yeah, Daniel Kahneman. He wrote a book, Thinking Fast and Slow. I'd love to put these two guys in a room and see what they thought, because he has this idea of the first mind and the second mind, right? The first mind's just pretty much all automation. It's all programmed. When it experiences something, it has an immediate reaction, and it's kind of that first defense. But then as you start to think about it, and the slower mind's the second one, where it takes that and analyzes it and then completely reprograms the first mind to react differently as it moves forward. So I'd love to see how that would work. The minute you start talking about it, that's what it reminded me of.
Those are the concepts just stated in different words. Like they all have their own words for it, but they're describing the same principles. You have this multifaceted brain that can observe other parts of itself operating, which is pretty unique.
Oh yeah, no, it's brilliant. I love it. No, I spend a lot of time doing that because it helps me to make sure I'm not just having an emotional response to something that's happening around me or something that's being presented to me. Keeping that in mind is important to me.
Well, it's being aware of like, oh, okay, this is the emotional response, and now I'm going to put my little web hook or my interrupt line. I'm going to put my little API call there, my little notification saying, all right, now I have the choice of how to respond. And that is something that has come with age, because it was a fluid thing prior. At 18, it was just action, reaction. Like, and now now there's this space between where I'm like, is that what I want to do?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Or for me, it usually it comes down to like there'll be this opposed opinion, and I just want to be like, nope, not doing it, not happening, never gonna. And they're like, well, no, wait. Think about it for a minute. What is the objective? What are they really doing? And I have to slow myself down and really think through it and not just have that first emotional response.
Yeah. I was actually, so I started this new project where I'm doing these little things called leader bits, these like little bits of leadership, like 2 to 3 minute videos about leadership with like a little exercise. And I was recording one last night called Hacking Neuralinks. Mm-hmm. And it's this discussion right here. It's that realization that something fires and then you have the ability to acknowledge it and then respond to it accordingly. And then I give a few examples of how it might actually happen like in the real world in relation to technology leaders. So this exercise of both writing the book plus doing these leader bits now, which is the extension of the book, because I go through this, it took my place in my schedule. Like instead of writing the book, I wanted to keep that spot in my schedule going. So this was the excuse to do that. And so it's kind of cool because it's like I get this little lesson out like all the time. It's real exciting for me.
No, it's really cool. I love it.
Yeah. So what sort of challenges, because you are remote, And is your team remote? Are they all in Texas or?
Sure. So the core of our company started around the idea of freedom.
That's a good idea.
It really is. Freedom, but not chaos. So, so the core of our company is in Grapevine, just outside of Dallas there. And we've got a lot of the what I consider the central hub there, but I've got five people now from both the marketing, the business side, as well as technology side, living in around the Seattle area. I've got a manager actually who just moved out to out near South Detroit area a couple of years ago, and he's been living out there. I got another one that's moving to Tennessee very soon, and so that's the one thing we really love about it, is the fact that you might decide to move, or your family situation takes you in a different way, but the next thing you do isn't have to go find a job. So we've really kind of embraced that idea that we are a company that is going to, be a distributed throughout the United States. In fact, it makes really great for a disaster recovery plan when you think about it.
It does.
Start looking at executive or the executive level of what you say, like what happens when we have a big problem in the South or the East or the West.
Yeah, hurricane hits Florida. Is the 100-person company shut down for 3 weeks?
Exactly, yeah. And that's not what happens here. In fact, we do have one person on the business side who lives in the Florida area. And I meant to ask where exactly that was, because I knew you're in the Florida area.
Yeah.
So, we have another one in California. But another group of about four in San Antonio area, and then everyone else just around the Grapevine place. So pretty distributed now, actually. Yeah.
And where is Grapevine?
Have you ever been in the Dallas airport?
Yeah.
Okay. So we are 3 minutes away from there.
Just, oh, that's easy.
Yeah. It's right
near. It's got a nice name though.
Yeah, like, it does.
It really does.
They do wine out there. So Grapevine makes a lot of sense.
Oh, there you go.
So yeah. I guess I believe it's just a little south of there, but you get off of out of Dallas airport, south, hit Texan Trail, boom, that's where our offices are.
Oh, that's awesome. So your development team is somewhat distributed as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, Seattle, Michigan, and then Texas.
Nice. Cold, warm.
Yes, yeah. I tell you what, as I said, I go down there once a month for a week, and I'm not relishing. I'm going down, I fly down Sunday for next week. I'm not relishing it because it's going to be warmer and warmer. By the time August hits, I'm going to be waiting for it. But I'll tell you what. Go on.
Sorry, 1 month every week.
Yeah.
One week every
yeah. Well, yeah. I did it too. But 1 week every month I go down, and we have an actual duplex, part of a duplex that we own. So as people fly in for meetings or whatever, they have a place to stay and they keep toiletries and stuff there. So it's not quite like always getting a hotel room and having to fly in and such. They've done a really great job to accommodate for that. Such things like Zoom is something we use all the time, Slack. Those conversations that we talk about, they you have to just consider your hallway conversations are now like a Slack conversation, or hey, let's talk for a minute is popping open a Zoom window and talking through things.
Yeah, and it's always about the people. It's like the tribe. Like some tribes it doesn't work for them. Oh, other absolutely. Tribes it works like amazing.
And that was the funny thing. There's this guy who is at, once again back to that the architecture thing. I was eating up everything he said. His name was Alan Holt. And you got to get him on the show, by the way.
What's his name? Alan
Holt. Let me make sure I get that right. I wrote it down. Just make sure I did forget. But where is it? Shoot. Yeah.
H-O-L-T. I'll Google it.
Holt. Yeah. Holt.
And what does he do?
Alan Holt, H-O-L-U-B. He's kind of a big talker now. He does a lot of talks on architecture and incremental architecture. I was in town listening to his incremental architecture talk. You can find one of his videos on architecture on YouTube as well. But his the way he thinks about just getting down to the agile methods necessary to put together an architecture and really just kind of get to the core of the meat of what you need to do and not worry about the technology behind it. It's just really brilliant. And I'm just eating up his work all day. And then we get onto this side topic of working remote. He's like, oh yeah, you just can't do that. And I was like, oh, you're killing me now.
No, you're like, I loved you for a minute.
I still do. And that was the thing I had to, but he goes off and he's like, yeah, the energy wasted and the amount of time it is trying to get a point across over a
web. Well, he had a bad experience.
Yeah, exactly. He had a bad experience. That's what I have to hope. But and I'm just like, oh man. So I went back to my hotel room after that talk. And the funny thing was, is it was also after I did an interview from my hotel room for someone I hired later about working remote and using all these tools. And I just had to internalize for a minute and go, is it really bad? Do I need to move to Dallas? What should I do? And
I got you thinking.
I got me thinking. And you always have to be a student. You always have to be a student.
Always.
Yes. And so I'm thinking about it. I'm like, no, I think I'm going to keep trying this and keep working with it. And I think it's worked really well, but if your culture of your company doesn't support it, I could see where that happens. But if everybody is lifting this up on a pedestal where it works, then absolutely it can succeed. I mean, I have like trackpads and all that, so we can do whiteboard stuff through Zoom. We have breakout sessions in there. We do all of our stuff. We have all of our conference rooms set up with conference equipment to make sure that every meeting has the best possible video and audio for anybody that is working remote versus in the office. It takes a whole tribe.
Yeah. Well, also people tend to fear what they don't know. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't forced this individual to work for 3 years remote, they won't have the skills to solve the problems, to overcome the difficulties that arise. For mm-hmm. someone who does have those skills, it's just another day.
Oh yeah.
I know how to make it work like this, right?
Absolutely agree. And that would be the one tip I'd give to anybody that is, you do have to become a lot more aggressive. Like you can't go, well, if they need me, they're going to let me know. No, you have to go get yourself involved in things and make them realize that your value, even though you are at a desk, you know, 16,000 miles away, is still important to the process that is going to move forward and adding that value that way. That would be the one tip I'd give to anybody that's really going to do it, because that's what's worked for me, is just making sure that you stick your nose in where you think it needs to be and not expect them to just bring you in.
Right. You're taking what already happened in a physical environment and you're finding your variation of it for the environment you're in. Cause like, yeah, this is what a boss does, or like a leader does. A leader walks into the room and says, what's up? You know, right. You're just doing that in the way that's acceptable for your situation.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Oh man. That's so like what's on your leadership mind lately? You read leader books, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I do read some. Actually, I've kind of gone a little bit the other way. I've been looking at more at leadership and technology lately. Books that I've looked at very recently. Have you read The Phoenix Project?
Oh, it's right there.
Okay, so
right there, yeah.
And have you gotten the follow up book, the DevOps Handbook?
Ooh, no.
Gene Kim and I believe Patrick Dovas, they have the DevOps Handbook. So what I end up doing, he's like, no, man.
I want the box. I'm sorry, I want the box.
No, take your time.
Yeah, thank you. Because no one here can hear the other. I mean, only Jake can hear the other side of this conversation.
No worries.
So Jackie's sitting next to me. She's like, "What are you reaching for?" I'm pointing over there because this just came. This was recommended to me this weekend by an individual on LinkedIn as an automated testing QA company.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, "It's like a novel," and I'm like, "What do you mean it's a novel?" And I got it. And I started flipping through it and I'm like, clearly she thinks John's theory is crazy. I'm like, what? I'm like, where's the bullet points for things to look for when testing?
So here's the birth of that book right here.
Okay.
This is the book that he basically took and adapted into the Phoenix Project. So.
Oh, nice. So that's Gene Kim or Kevin or George?
Yeah. And Gene Kim and Patrick Dovas, I believe, is on that one. I don't know. They did, but they also did the DevOps Handbook, which if you've not got that, you want that for that book. But I'll tell you what, I took the Phoenix Project and I started reading it. I couldn't put it down. I usually read a bit of, you know, fiction and nonfiction books. I was all in on just reading the Phoenix Project. So make sure you have a strong, you know, a good light weekend before you pick it up, because you're not going to put it down once you start. At least
I'm actually taking some time, taking 2 days with the family, the first time in the past year. We just had a baby, so we've got an 8-month-old daughter. We've been tied at home for a while.
I've been hearing about it. I'm one of those people who's kind of a completist. So I picked up your book, read the first page, saw you had a podcast, and I was like, oh, so I put the book down, immediately started picking up the podcast. So I was working one through, and I think I'm up through 20 now. And then I listened to the last few just to make sure I was up to date on how you're kind of rolling things before I got into this myself. But
so what do you think? So I don't have the opportunity to be outside of myself, right? Uh-huh. So like going through and in the completest fashion, like through each item, like what do you think?
The value you've added even to my company based on what I've done so far has been impressive. In fact, I wrote down a few of these things. Andy Budd, the UX designer you had on.
Yeah.
Oh, I literally wrote down, hell yes. I knew that I wanted someone to come in and help with our UX and getting a good flow for that. But the tips and tricks, I was really like, maybe we can find someone to kind of help with it and it'd be great. And he's like, no, I got to go get the best one money can buy. And I was like, okay, I've totally got a different outlook on that. So in my look for UX designer, definitely that's added value to my company. We'll be looking at there. Derek Johnson, you had him on in podcast number 4. He really helped me internalize what I was doing as a CTO. One of the things that you really said in the first part of your book, and I was like, yes, this guy is he knows exactly everything I was thinking about 2 years ago when I took on being a CTO. I was like, I had no idea. And when I looked at Amazon, I looked around all the things you'd said, I could have wrote the first page of your book, maybe slightly different words, but all of that
rang
completely true to me. And I was just like, you get it, which is why I've been so in love with all this. And just help me, because of that, help me internalize. I wasn't just taking crazy pills with some of the things I was thinking about.
Right.
It totally made sense because unlike a lot of other people who kind of came from a development background, I actually came from a testing development background into this role. And I was just thinking, should I still be coding? Things like that. What's the most important piece I should think about? He really helped with that. Podcast number 7, Ryan Singer. I loved him. Yeah. We are now experimenting with 6-week ship cycles within my architect group and a couple of my other teams. And we're looking at how we can set up for Q2 to play around with that idea and actually, try it out, see how it works. Really love that. And then you just had Miguel on recently with the New York from New York CTO guy. His talk on net neutrality was just like, yeah, I'm all in. Like, what do we need to do for it? Washington just passed some laws that pretty much are going to uphold net neutrality. And I couldn't agree with him more. And thinking a little bit more about it from a business perspective, not even a personal perspective, absolutely. It's something we need to be very, very cognizant about and continue to push the right things forward.
Yeah, he just... on the show, I don't know if it made it into the final edit, but we were talking about he's got some big news coming up.
Yeah, right? I saw that.
You saw it? So he went to MasterCard.
Yeah, I saw that.
Isn't
on
that
LinkedIn. Yeah, no, I saw it on LinkedIn. I was like, wow, that's going to be cool. I'm happy to have be a MasterCard holder now. It's like, yeah, right? I love what he's doing there. It really is awesome.
Yeah, and we have Near. There's this product, a book called Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. Mm-hmm. And it's a real popular book on that. They went around to Facebook and all the big sites do these same things to get products to be sticky. And so he analyzes that. It's like a bestseller and he was on the show. So his episode will be coming out soon.
Excellent. No, I'm looking forward to it. I did hear you talking about it and I've got it on my list, but no,
that's the best feedback ever.
Oh,
what are you doing in the morning? I'm sorry. I'm so excited to talk to you right now.
That's all good. I had to build like pages of notes to make sure I didn't
just
be a complete idiot for the.
No, this is amazing. I love Excellent. It. We prep. We've got 4 pages of notes on you. Thank you, Jay. Awesome. Right?
Yes, absolutely. No, I feel honored. Thank you.
Yes. So what were you doing in the morning?
Oh, in the mornings, what I'll do is my friend owns a coffee shop down the road. So first thing I do is pop on whatever podcast is going on. So you're my morning 5-10 minute drive back and forth. So yeah, keep bringing the value, brother.
See, we got Microsoft, VMware, T-Mobile.
Ooh.
And then we have, just so you know, we have like 20 podcasts that haven't even been released yet.
Yeah. When are you sleeping, man? When are you...
we started with three a day. Uh-huh. Then I lost my voice. So we backed it down to two, then back down to one. And so we've been doing one a day solid for, I don't know, 6 months, 7 months.
Wow. Jeez. Yeah. So awesome. Yeah. At one point I will get in to actually start. That's why I have all this equipment. I wanted to do some podcast stuff myself, but I just haven't, that's one thing I haven't got to yet. Just
when it happens, you got to have me on.
Of course. You're kidding. You'll be like top of the list.
Even if it's like tracking Elon Musk boring holes under the earth.
What's Elon Musk doing today in the podcast?
Ooh, dude, I'm not kidding you. There is a podcast. Like call it like the Daily Musk.
What the heck is this? No, it's interesting. Just tune in. Have a good time.
I'm serious. You would get a following, and then that is your most likely path to meeting the man.
Oh man, you're not wrong. Yeah. Gosh,
right?
Just become super fanboy. I love it.
I love what he's doing too. Okay, so I mean, we talked about managing remote teams, yes, leadership, developers, CTO. You love craft beer.
Oh yeah,
and Star Wars.
Star Wars, indeed. I love Star Wars. Love craft beer. Huge fan of craft beers. My, in fact, that's kind of how I met my wife. She's a Canadian, and Canada has an amazing amount of craft beer that never gets to the U.S. just because it's too expensive to really import very often. So, or I was always up there just drinking the beer up that way too.
Yeah, and so have you ever made craft beer that has Star Wars themes?
No, I have not made one with Star Wars themes, not yet. Yeah. I did brew a dark cherry porter that was absolutely
I'm a fan of dark cherry stuff.
Yeah. Oh man, so good! I was so impressed. It had the most beautiful kind of, you know, you've got your dark porter, but it had this red tint to it that was just beautiful.
Yeah, it's called like Vader.
Yeah. Trying to think. Right? I gotta think of a good fruit and then mix it with the word Vader. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Peach Vader or something. I don't know.
There you go. Peach Vader. That Peach works. Vader.
All right.
We'll take an iterative approach to this, just like building a product.
Absolutely. Take first round, bring it in, put some just Vader, but with the head of a peach instead of the helmet. It'd be perfect.
You win. All right. But you can't drink while you're racing rally cars. I want to hear about the rally car racing.
Oh man. So I have an affinity for Subarus, probably more than actually rally racing. But back in the early 2000s, my good friend who I knew from high school, he had bought a Subaru Impreza. And everything I known about Subarus were pretty much, you know, that was your grandma's car. In fact, my grandma had a Subaru. And when he brought this thing over, it just looked sexy. I love the look of this car, and I'm like, this is a Subaru. I can't even believe it. And from there, I kind of got in. And when I get into something, I'm all in. I just dig as deep as I can. I wouldn't even drive a car if I didn't understand how it worked. And so I'm learning far more about Boxster engines and how all this works. And then I get under the whole thing about rally racing. And they had a club rally scene in the Northwest. And so I had a couple of rally cars that we had built up with roll cages, all that. And we rallied all over the kind of the Northwest. The SCCA has a racing scene there for club rally. And I did that for a long time. And then when I had my son, my wife had asked me to, like, you know, just kind of cut it out because it's kind of dangerous and you should probably be here for your kid. So I kind of backed off from like the really hardcore racing like that. I went to some of the predecessors to Dirtfish and such in Maine and the one in Florida, I can't remember where it is now. It's down there near Tampa. They had a race school down there and I went over there to get a lot of the training for all that. I did that for a good couple of years. I look back at the price tag of what it costs to run one of those things, and I'm like,
oh yeah,
I could have probably packed away a lot more retirement if I wasn't buying cars and wrecking them.
My grandfather is a professional boat racer.
Oh, nice. That's even more dangerous than rally racing.
He rode with like Don Johnson. They won like a world championship for boat racing in like 1988.
That's crazy. I mean, I've met some of those guys, but never ran with them. We had always kind of would basically have your big pro day, and then the next day the club ralliers get in there. So you'll see them kind of cleaning up from the day before. So you meet and mingle a little bit, but never actually get a run with any of those guys. Nothing too crazy there.
I have a friend for you now. So his name is Marco. He has a company called Venzi. They just went public in Canada. So he's in Canada.
Okay.
And he's a CTO. I think their company is, around the same size of yours. And they do some really cool stuff. But he's into the Subaru racing as well.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Yeah, so you can go get craft beer, talk about your Subarus. And his episode's actually coming out in like the next 2 or 3 weeks, or probably the next 2 weeks. Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. No, definitely have to talk about all the GM8s and GC8 body types and what's his favorite, STIs.
Yeah, all your acronyms. All of them.
All those things. Yeah. All of them. Absolutely. No, that'll be fun. I'll have to meet with him.
Yeah. And I'm going to call Derek too after the show. Be like, dude, somebody liked your episode. lots of people liked it, but he was like, he called me up after that. He's like, I don't know how it went. I'm like, it went fine, dude. You were awesome. He's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah. You know, Derek, fun inside fact, Derek was the first episode.
Oh, was he actually? So it wasn't actually a podcast number four. It was number one, huh?
He was number one. Derek was the first episode, the only episode that like had happened outside of the podcast studios, because I decided to do Modern CTO podcast because we had been successful in like a conversational way with phone calls and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I got an office for it, and it was like 2 days before I moved into the office. And so I just did it from my home office, and I was like, Derek, you got to help me like pilot this episode. And it was awesome. Yeah.
No, man, like seriously, Pascal, I think if you had the perfect moment, I wasn't kidding when I sent an email to you, I think you should get like some like Darren and Ryan and a couple of these really big guys, and you just need to do a round table with them. I'd love to hear all these guys just talk about all these ideas. I think it'd be brilliant.
We will. I'll do it. We'll find a place where like, I'll look at a map. We have a past guest sheet, mm-hmm. and we have all the locations of everybody. So I'm going to find a place where we can like easily all get together, and then just like get like a, you know, at the hotels or the conference centers, you can get like a conference room like for the day. Yeah. And then get everyone there as easy as possible. And then just have like get everyone to pitch up topics and have an awesome conversation.
Absolutely. No, definitely. I'd love to. That'd be great.
Yeah. And then obviously you're on the list, dude.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. Yeah. No,
you've got to come.
I better get more CTO advice then, or else.
Oh, since you listened to the older episodes recently, we got to do the time. You're prepared for the time machine question.
Oh, man. I have thought about that. I won't lie.
All right. What is it? I'm giving you the time machine question. Elon Musk. He says, hey, buddy. He pulls up next to you in your Subaru. Right? That's what it sounds like. Jake will edit an effect in there.
It's Subaru rules, and I'll be in the room. His will just be silent because he comes in the electric.
The E Subaru. That is true.
That's right.
Mine sounds like your neighbor's lawnmower. And then yours sounds like a muscle car. So you meet Elon Musk, pull up at a red light, and he asks you, you get in his car for some awkward reason, and his car is the time machine.
Right.
And back in the past 10 years, what advice do you give to your previous self?
I went over this a couple times in my head. I will say that the one thing it would be while I was still at Microsoft, I would say that invest in yourself and the people around you more than the company you're part of. At the time I was at Microsoft, I was all in on the Kool-Aid. I really believed in that game plan there. But looking back, I think I wouldn't have changed a whole lot, but I would say that I would have put more in people and more in investing in your career versus necessarily company's needs. Like, make sure that you're building yourself up, because people are what make all these things. That's what a culture is. The one thing I'd say that keeps Defy rolling for me right now is people are what make it. I promise you, I would put $20 on the table and say, call anyone in my company, ask what's the number one reason you're there, and it would be people. People are what make it. So invest in that and invest in those people around you, and make sure that you're doing right by them and building a community and a culture that will, you know, thrive for that.
That's like, I want to cry. It's like a poem. It's like a beautiful, responsible, amazing, insightful poem answer. I love it.
Oh, thank you. But was it too convoluted? But I mean, that's the core of it. Like, when I first became a CTO 2 years ago, I was like, wondered what it'd be like to be the person who was the chief technical officer.
I am chief.
And I look at it then and think, oh yeah, I'll make these decisions. It's gonna be great. Now I've got this completely different aspect of it, and that is that, oh man, I have so many people's careers and responsibility for making sure that they have an opportunity to succeed. That is my number one job, is just to empower all these developers and all these managers and all these people that work for me to make sure that they are able to do their best job possible. And that's the most important thing I can be doing.
Yeah. And it's amazingly rewarding to be able to be in a position where your job is literally to resource these amazing people around you to do the best that they can do.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. Today we use the Scrum methodology. We do these sprint reviews, and at the end of these 2 weeks, watching what these people are putting together and show off to the rest of the company. Today we were working on kind of our formula engine, how we wanted to improve its performance. And I'm just sitting in my room, just jumping up and down going, this is blowing my mind. Awesome.
Yeah.
And it wasn't my idea. It was not anything I had to do, but just the fact that I was able to help these guys nurture this creative experience and just make these huge wins. It made me far more proud if I'd figured it out myself. I can't even express how proud I was of that. So it was awesome.
It's weird how we work as humans, but I love it and it's beautiful.
Oh yes, absolutely. Managing Humans, actually, another book you should read.
That's actually on my wish list. I have to get through Phoenix Project, 0-1 by Peter Thiel. And then of course, I'm doing a leader bit on The Pragmatic Programmer.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, so I started writing the leader bits, and then I was like, you know what I should do? There's some, when I'm reading books, they'll like, and give me thoughts about my past. And I'm like, oh, you know, I had a lesson like this. And I'm just like, when you're reading my book, you're like, oh, I experienced this. I'm not crazy.
Yeah. So
I get that from reading these books. So then I thought, hey, maybe I'll do a set of leader bits on like what I took from The Pragmatic Programmer. And then just, I researched the law so I don't get sued.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why, yeah, it works.
Definitely.
Dude, Rob, this is the best.
I love
this conversation. This has been fantastic.
Absolutely. We should do it again soon.
We absolutely will. I'm going to look at the past guest spreadsheet and actually see and plan and think about the ability to do this, get together. I'm going to start reaching out to people and see if they're interested in it. If they're interested in it, I think they will be. Then we'll figure out how to logistically execute it. And then you got to come out.
Absolutely. I will be there. Got my word.
So all right, so I'll stop the backup system. Backup system stop. Jake, how are we doing? We're doing good? We got the whole thing recorded? All right. Oh, great.
Crazy thing.
Awesome. Thank you. We're gonna tag you and micro clip it and put it out. We're definitely behind, but I really enjoyed your episode. So we'll bump you up. It won't be a crazy amount of time.
Sure. Maybe. Yeah. Just let me, if you let me know about it, I'm sure our marketing team will want to, you know, play it.
Yeah. They do that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, anything you need, just email me, brother. I'm there for
you. All right. Talk soon.
Cheers.
Thank you so much for listening to the Modern CTO Podcast. Share this, get the word out. Thank you guys so much. I couldn't do it without you. I appreciate it. You guys are the absolute best.